Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
It's Garbled Twistery. Welcome back. And I can proudly say we made it to the second presidential freaking election. We spent some episodes talking about the major contenders duking it out and how they became major contenders and whatnot. So yeah, as described in the episodes leading up to this one, the government was starting to break up into two opposing political parties for the very first time. All thanks to Alexander Hammy-Tammy running around trying to get kids to work in the peanut factory and making everybody mad because he was a penny pincher. And while I can actively say the recently created Democratic Republican Party hated Alexander Hammy-Tammy and his motley gang of Federalists, I can't really say that the people in both camps were solidly and unflinchingly in both camps. Like, this split was still wishy-washy because it was still super young and stuff, okay? So yeah, like I have probably expressed before, everybody was still freaking obsessed with Jorge Washington, probably because he could, like, jump across the Federalist and Democratic-Republican fences without anyone gossiping at the dinner table about it. And I talked before about how all these Democratic-Republican peeps were sending all of their spirit bomb energy to George Clinton thanks to some crazy power moves on his part. The Federalists decided they might as well keep pushing for freaking Johnny Adams because Johnny wasn't being a thorn in the side about freaking states' rights or whatever. So, like, Johnny A and George C were totally in it for that vice presidency action, even though on paper they were competing with Mr. Washington. But yeah, that true Jackson VP position was a real royal rumble between what was basically Alexander Hammy-Tammy and his economic goons versus the hashtag taxation is theft crowd. So yeah, the election happened, and as you probably should know, Johnny Adams got to be the VP again. I mean, it was pretty much like a 20-something electoral vote difference, though. So, like, I don't know. That feels very close. Like, Jorge Washington had basically double John Adams' votes, okay? So, yeah, Jorge Washington claimed the Iron Throne, much to his chagrin. Yeah, he was complaining. He was all like, quote, "I'm getting old. I'm getting sick every month. I'm tired of all this catty, passive-aggressive nonsense from these grown men," unquote. I mean, he said all this, and everybody was all like, please stay. We still have to make t-shirts with your face on them. Please, don't go. Please just stay. Jorge didn't even say he was gonna run. But I guess because he didn't say he was not gonna run, everybody just freaking voted for him literally against his will! Again! So yeah, that's how the proverbial cookie crumbled. I don't have much to say about the actual process of voting, cause like, not much has changed since the last time, okay? So if you wanna know that, check out the election number one episode. So normally, this is the part where I creatively tell you to go away, but I feel like that would be an absolute tragedy. How exactly, you ask? Well, pretty much everything I just talked about is like the exact same stuff I talked to you about in the last three freaking episodes, man. So ending it now? Now? No, honey boo boo, we can't have that. So what are we gonna do instead? Well, remember that thing from the last episode that was a crazy daisy cliffhanger of a situation that I wanted to finish talking about really, really badly, but I didn't because I wanted to preserve the integrity of the freaking election coming up? Yeah, let's jump right back into this Whiskey Rebellion fiasco because it's some real high-key stuff, okay? Okay, so Alexander Hammy-Tammy is trying to save up his money because, like, America is already in some crazy college-level debt with people from outside and inside the country simultaneously. So when he realized something had to be taxed on the people, he thought, quote, "Well, what about whiskey? They don't need to be drinking that sludge anyways," unquote. But little did this city boy know, there were a bunch of average, everyday farmers, and their entire livelihood counted on them farming whiskey. Why? Well, they got more money for it, and it's easier to carry over the huge freaking Appalachian Mountains. Why would they have to go that way? Because nobody was swimming up the Mississippi River to trade stuff anymore. So yeah, these small town farmers had a lot of problems with this freaking tax. Like the fact that the big fat alcohol companies in the big cities didn't have to pay as much. Why? Well, they made a lot of alcohol, so they could afford to just pay the flat fee and not pay the tax by the gallon, while Farmer Brown over here has to pay by the gallon because the flat fee was crazy. Also, like, everything is cheaper in the middle of nowhere, so the taxes felt like way too high for Farmer Brown than they did for Big City Billy. And if the law was changed and the two groups, like, paid the same price or whatever, it would just be proportionally out of whack, because Big City Bill would just be paying pennies while Farmer Brown is over here, like, mortgaging his freaking lawnmower over it. Oh, and on top of that, if you didn't pay, you had to go to court. This means Farmer Brown would have to waste his time and risk his livelihood to freaking travel 300 miles to the only existing courthouse in Philly. So yeah, the farmer people were not having it, okay? Like, they would straight up not pay, then they would chase all the tax collectors away when they showed up, then they would threaten to beat up anybody who let a tax collector stay in the house. The tax collectors pretty much didn't show up, or at least didn't show up to stay in Philly, because why go to work in a place where everybody wants you pushing daisies? You know? I think this could be the reason why the IRS is so freaking mean nowadays. They're tired of people putting them through this pitchfork protest cow dung stupidity. Mm-hmm. The icing on the cake that probably tipped the proverbial glass of non-violent milk over was the fact that there was this entire war going on with the Northwest Native Americans in the U.S. They were losing. Yeah, the U.S. was losing so bad that all the Northwest farmers thought that, like, they were deliberately not being protected by the U.S., okay? So, yeah.
Things got violent.
But, of course, there was a buildup. It started with some petitions. That didn't work. Then the farmers tried to put all of their cool lawyer friends on the case, and they ended up creating a Justice League of an assembly to talk about this freaking issue, as we Americans tend to do when we have a big fat problem. So they drew up a really cool-looking petition, and it worked! Well, kinda. Like, the feds dropped the tax by a single cent. Yeah, 1 cent. If that isn't passive-aggressively frustrating, then my name is Aloysius. And it's not! So yeah, people were grabbing their pitchforks and ignoring the other people in town who were all like, quote, "Can't we all just get along? Won't somebody please think of the children?" Unquote. A tax collector got freaking tarred and feathered, and the people who did that couldn't see the difference between what they were doing and what was happening during the freaking revolution. Even though Pennsylvania did technically have representation in the federal government, and maybe, just maybe, if they let the federal government officials stay in town for more than, like, 5 minutes, they could convince them to convince the government to go easy on them with the freaking taxes. Just maybe! But no! Punch and kick the IRS, why don't you? So, what did Alexander Hammy Tammy think of all this nonsense? All this hoo-ha! Quote, hashtag, send the freaking troops. Unquote. He would have, but the attorney general was all like, nah, we can't do this. It isn't legal enough. So there was another meeting in West Pennsylvania, and this time there were militias being formed. Rut-row raggy. So yeah, Alexander Hammy Tammy sent some dude named George Clymer to investigate. Unfortunately, this guy was an idiot. Everybody saw through his stupid disguise, and he was constantly trying to be a tough guy, and his findings were a tad crazier than they were accurate. And well, those exaggerated findings were what the freaking U.S. used to craft their response. This ain't gonna be pretty, folks. Yeah. Like, Washington and Hammy Tammy wrote this whole proclamation and everything that said, quote, "Stop breaking the law. We're warning you." Unquote. It fell on deaf ears, so they broke out the subpoenas. And the thing about these subpoenas is that they were sent out before the government had a chance to tell everybody that they didn't have to travel 300 freaking miles to settle the matter. But I don't know. Alexander Hammy Tammy wanted to send in the freaking troops from the very start. So Maybe he might have deliberately sent out the subpoenas right before everybody was told they could settle it in local court, just to make everybody so mad and crazy that the military has to come in. Or maybe it was just an accident. A little boo-boo. You decide. So yeah, a full-on battle happened at some general named Neville's house, and the Mingo Creek Militia, this is what the angry farmers called themselves, were actually, like, shooting at the freaking troops, okay? So there was this moment where both sides stopped shooting, and the Mingo Creek Militia general put up the white flag and stepped out with his hands in the air, all like, quote, "Listen, fellas, we're out of ammo. Can't we talk about this over lunch or something?" They killed him. They killed General McFarlane while his freaking hands were in the air. Oh no. The rebels set that house on fire when that happened, and the troops knew they had to get freaking out of there, because they would be the next thing set on fire. Holy guacamole. Yeah, that nonsense just drove everybody bananas. They were stealing money from the post office and talking about shooting people casually in town and stuff. Insanity! Like, it stopped being about the whiskey altogether, man. Like, every person in town who had more than $100 in their pocket was getting robbed, even though they had nothing to do with the freaking tax, by poor people who didn't even grow whiskey. And all these poor people were over here yelling and hollering about bringing the guillotine to America and declaring independence from America and joining Spain or Britain. Yeah, because the French Revolution is a totally pleasant and enjoyable experience we want to emulate over here in America. Yeah, okay. I mean, they wanted to march through Pittsburgh and burn it all down, burn it all. But some peeps from Pittsburgh showed up and were all like, "Yeah, it's cool. We'll let you walk through town. It's a democracy after all. Just please don't burn stuff though. People live here, you know?" And the protesters were all like, "Meh, sure. Okay, dude." They did still burn some farmland. Like, they burned one general's entire farm. Just one. So finally, President Jorge gets the chance to, like, show up and see what in the world is going on. And he sent, like, people to talk peace, but he sent the troops with them, which was very clever, Jorge. If there's troops hanging around, people are more likely to shake your hand sometimes. So after writing up some laws to legalize the feds bringing in the troops and telling the crazy militias to disband directly, Jorge Washington figured it was about time to put an end to all this freaking chaos and tried to form a federal militia of like 13,000 freaking people. That's a lot. And this caused a whole lot of draft dodging and even some uprisings in the East. I guess people there were all like, "No, we're not gonna freaking go to Pennsylvania to fire guns for you. We literally just did that. You gotta be kidding me." But anyways, Washington led the 13,000 freaking troops into West Pennsylvania and scared the Beetlejuice out of everybody. And the protest ended immediately, and nobody dared to fire a freaking single gunshot. So as the dust was settling, some of the leaders ran away. Most were tried, but there wasn't any evidence saying they were really all that vital to the resistance. Two were sentenced to treason and were gonna hang, but Jorge pardoned them. Quote, "No hard feelings, fellas. Just don't do this nonsense again. I have bigger things to worry about, and this was just so freaking annoying, okay? Like, you have no idea." Unquote. So who was to blame? You decide. Who did Jorge and Alexander Hamitari blame for this? Those Democratic Republicans! Why? Well, some of the people who were protesting were also members of their local Democratic Republican fan club. But, like, there's no proof at all that the two things are related at all. So, who's to blame? You decide. If you got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, the fact that Potbelly lets you put jalapenos in your mac and cheese, you can find Garbled Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to the garbledtwistery.net website and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q at garbledtwistery.net. Next time... Everybody's got the fever. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Fever started long ago. Fever started long ago.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
Won't somebody please think of the children?